If any man have an ear, let him hear. All right. Does that statement sound familiar to anyone who's been in this Revelation class for any length of time? Yeah. The first three chapters, particularly chapter 2 and 3, are filled with every time Jesus addresses his body, the church, his body. He's talking to that which is of him, but he's trying to bring that which is legally and spiritually of him into a reality of him in a certain way. And that's what this book of Revelation is about. And that's interesting because the word ear is almost used in the book of Revelation more than all of the other New Testament books combined. This one chapter, and I mean this one book of Revelation, and it is primarily used by the Lord to get the attention of his body, to get the attention, but not just to get their attention, but in gaining their attention to communicate something that we'll put it like this. Book of Revelation is at the end of the book. It's getting sort of into the thing of what God was wanting to do. I mean, it's a far cry from Genesis. Now we're into Revelation. And he's trying to get his body to focus in on the thing that he holds as so important. And therefore, he says it over and over and over and over again. He that hath an ear to hear, let him hear. If any man have an ear, let him hear. But interestingly enough, in the second and third chapter, where he uses it with every church, at the end of it, he really doesn't say, if anyone hath an ear to hear, let him hear this. In other words, he's saying one thing to the church at Sardis and another thing to the Laodicean church and another thing, at least in word usage, it seems to be different. And yet he doesn't say, you know, let him hear and then addresses that. He talks and then he says, now if any man hath an ear to hear, let him hear. This is the first time and the main time that he gives us the explanation of what he wants us to hear so that we can know exactly what it is that he wants us to hear so that we can say, Jesus, I want to hear your voice, you know. I want to hear your word. I don't want to just hear your tonal notes. I want to hear the concepts of your heart. The concepts of your heart that you have for us. And it's interesting that he uses this explanation right in the middle of Revelation 13. So this is like bad man's land. 12 and 13 are the rough parts where the beast and the dragon and all this stuff's going on, okay? And it's right there, right in the worst spot, right in the most, it would be the most strategic to the Lord. It would be the most difficult for us because at that moment of the power of the enemy rising so strong, he's trying to communicate something of his nature and of his life. All right, so to get the full picture of this, let's see. Let's start at verse 6 now, Revelation 13, 6. And he opened his mouth in blasphemy against God to blaspheme his name and his tabernacle and them that dwell in heaven. And it was given unto him to make war with the saints and to overcome them And power was given him over all kindreds, tongues, and nations. And all that dwell upon the earth shall worship him whose names are not written in the Lamb's book, in the book of life of the Lamb slain from the foundation of the world. If any man have an ear, let him hear. Okay? So sandwiched in between verse 9 is verse 8 and verse 10. Then verse 10. So we know that verse 9 is referencing verse 8, but it's also referencing verse 10. He that leadeth into captivity shall go into captivity. He that killeth with the sword must be killed with the sword. Here is the patience and the faith of the saints. If any man hath an ear to hear, let him hear. He's given the key to the victory over all of the beasts right here. He is literally opening his heart and he's explaining everything that he was trying to set forth in the first couple of chapters, but they didn't have an ear to hear. And now, in the situation where this beast is given all this power to rule and to destroy and to kill and to overcome God's saints, there comes a word from God. And it says, all that dwell upon the earth shall worship him whose names are not written in the book of life of the Lamb. Not just the book of life. It's Lamb life. It's Lamb life. Slain Lamb life. Thank you very much. And, I appreciate Nisi saying something because I just want to remind you again that when she taught this, she really got down into the nitty-gritty of a bunch of the individual things that I'm sort of going over the surface of. So I encourage you to look up that series and check it out further. But it is the Lamb's book of life, but it is the slain Lamb that is being honored here. And then he says, if you have an ear to hear, you need to hear this. And then he says, okay, and here's the principle behind it. He that leads into captivity, if you lead people into captivity, if you're not laying down your life, you're trying to captivate people. There's different ways of captivating people. You can do it with chains, or you can do it with excellent words and, you know, the thing Paul said he wouldn't do because he preached Christ crucified, and he can't violate his message with his methods. He can't do it. And I could be wrong, but I think your little camera just hit the back of the head of somebody there. Then he goes on to say, and if you kill with the sword, you must be killed with the sword. We're familiar with the old saying, if you live by the sword, you shall die by the sword. Well, I mean, it's a principle of lamb life or beast life. If you're living beast life, these will come upon you. If you're living by his nature, his selfless nature, if you are, you do know that she's called the bride of the Lamb, don't you? I mean, she could have been called anything. The bride of the King, you know, the bride of, you know, there's so many terms that could have been used that God chose. No, what she married, what she joined unto, what she loved was the extreme selflessness that is Christ. And she loved it so much she wanted to be, she didn't just want to stand back and admire it. You know, she didn't just want to be Peter warming his hands by the fire outside, and then when the fire starts coming on him, he goes, no, I don't even know the guy, you know. she wanted him, but she knew what that meant. She knew the him that she was asking for. And that's special. You know why there's so much divorce? A lot of times people marry people they don't even know. Oh, I know him. We went on dates. Trust me, 99% of what you see on a date is fake. For most people, not everybody. But we all, anybody ever remember going on a date and you get all fixed up and you put on your best behavior and you do all this stuff and, you know, especially if you're not like the person, you know. If you could care less, then maybe you don't. But she saw past the surface. She saw past the gifts. She saw past the power. She saw past all of the things that would draw a person to someone like the Lord. And she embraced his core. His core. His core. That means she really loved Jesus. You know. I mean, I remember when I was in school and high school and all that, you know, even college. And I remember, you know, girls would, you know, like me and want to go out on a date. And we'd go on a date. And they would like the fact that, you know, I played in a band and our band was real popular. Or she would like, you know, all these things that really weren't me. They were what I did, but they weren't me. And believe it or not, I remember not liking that. I remember kind of going, well, you don't even know. No, I do. You know, you like writing songs or poetry and you like doing this and you like that. And I said, no, I write songs and poetry, but I don't particularly like it. Just, it's the Lord. It's not me or whatever. Back then, I was just writing it. But no real deep perception of who I was. And I thought, you know, after I came to the Lord, I wondered, is he that way? You know, he turned to his Jesus, turned to his own disciples and says, who do men say that I am? Whoa, come on. That's pretty. Jesus is really wanting to know if they know him. Who do they say? Well, some say you're this, some say you're that. He's going, almost, I mean, if you really listen to the words, he goes, but who do you say that I am? Okay. Most of us perceive a glorious moment as after he asked that. Who do you perceive that? Well, you're the Christ, the Son of the living God. You would expect angels to start singing and appearing in heaven and him going, somebody believe, you know. And so then when Peter opens up and says, okay, I really know who you are, he starts talking immediately. This is the next verse. He starts talking about going to the cross and dying. And Peter, you know, the famous not so Lord, the two things that don't go together, not so and Lord, you know, you don't say not so to the Lord. That came out of his mouth and he began to try to convince Jesus not to be the Lamb, because he is the Lamb. He just was going to manifest it at its height at the cross. And one verse, you know, two verses before, when he said, you know, I basically didn't say this, but I mean, I'm proud of you for saying what you said, Peter. You came closer than they did. He says, Peter, get behind me, Satan. Now, I don't know about y'all, but I really wouldn't want to hear that from the Lord. You know? Yeah. Well, I would have, you know. Are you saying I'm Satan? You know, all that self-pity and all that junk that comes up in us. So Jesus proceeds to spell out the Lamb nature and what he's really about. He just lays it out. Well, you know, basically all most Christians hear from that, they don't hear his core, they don't hear his nature, they don't hear his being, they hear his mission. He's going to come and die for us. That's where it came. He's got a mission to carry out. Yeah. His mission is to be a manifestation of God, to be the image of the invisible God. That's his mission. That's what he lived for. You know. What is it? John 17? Father, I've finished my work. I've made you known. You know. And he did it in a manner that didn't declare himself, but he declared the Father. So, so here it comes to, in Revelation 13, and it comes to, okay, that now if you really want to know what I want you to hear, this is it. If you do for God the same things they're doing for the beast, you're no different. The means is just as important as the end. It all must be Christ. It must be Christ, yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah, the means is the end in that it is a constant manifesting of Christ crucified. It is a constant, okay, let's put it in another. It's a constant selflessness that can only come by Christ. So it has to be Christ. You see what I mean? You can't. You and me are not that way. That's not our nature. That's why we have become partakers of the divine nature. It's Christ in us. It's not us. There's no glory to us. We're just earthen vessels. Earthen. He's treasure. He's valuable. He's valuable to us. So in that sense, the means is the end, because in the end, there might be a bigger manifestation, but it's all what you've been living all along. And I believe that. I believe if in little things you can manifest Christ, when it comes to the big crisis, you'll go with the Lord. I believe if you say yes, 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 then when you get down there, you'll say yes. But, you know, so many churches just want to put on a big event one time, no little things, no practice anything. Let's just have a big event and let's just all shout for the glory of the big event, and then we will recede back into the darkness. Excuse my way of saying this, but you understand what I mean. We'll go back to what we were. Because we can't help it. Because that's what we were. That's what we were, not this big event that looks so much full of Jesus. Okay. I need to quit talking. Got to read a little bit here. Last class we got one paragraph into a two-paragraph section. So I'm going to go ahead and read the first paragraph quickly and not go over the scriptures, and then just finish off the second one. The intention of the beast is to destroy all opposition, but the Lamb seeks the interest of others, even of his own oppressors. Those who follow the Lamb love their enemies. We explained all this. They have acknowledged that the way of Christ crucified is a way that gives up its own interest instead of using the cross to get their way. It is not a means of winning, but a means to help enemies to win. For example, Saul of Tarsus, the enemy of Jesus, becoming free to become Paul, the apostle of the Lord. All right, this next paragraph I didn't read. We stopped at the end of that last one. The witness of the Lamb is demonstrated in selfless giving and loss in order to benefit others. But when contrasted with the way of beasts, the beast is seen for its internal motivations and agenda. And that means when you contrast this way of Christ crucified with beasts, you see a difference of internal motivation. You see self on the throne, or you see Lamb on the throne. The vast amount of content in the book of Revelation does not concern education, and we mentioned this last time I jumped ahead. I didn't remember where it was at, but I'd mentioned this. The vast amount of content in the book of Revelation does not concern education in doctrinal issues or attention to theology. Its primary information concerns the things of character and nature. In this book, the Spirit seeks not simply to open our ears to the things of God, but to open our ears to His nature as demonstrated by Christ at the cross. By means of this recognition, we should also become more discerning concerning what is not of the Lord's nature. You know, a lot of people wouldn't be in trouble. A lot of Christians wouldn't fall into traps and stuff if they understood that it's not an issue of, you know, I mean, just take it. The Bible says the devil himself is transformed into an angel of light. Okay, well, we all know that theologically, but I don't know how many of us. And you know what? That knowledge won't do you a bit of good unless you really know what the contrast is. I mean, just knowing that the angel can turn into the devil can turn into an angel of light really doesn't do you any good, other than maybe you're walking around going, is it you? Is it you? Is it you? You know what I mean? I mean, that's the extreme version of that. But in fact, that's what deception is. You become deceived. And what is it you become deceived by? The external appearance says, I'm this. I'm a great man. I'm a man of God. I'm, you know, if you really want to know if I'm a man of God, go check out my Facebook page. You know, and I've yet to see one. Maybe, you know what, maybe I'll finally get on Facebook and just do it. I've yet to see a Facebook page that says, you know, Here's a real picture of me. This is what I really look like. And then have another picture behind it that is a spiritual picture and says, this is what I look like on the inside. Well, Facebook plays right into the hands of human nature. It gives you an opportunity to declare yourself. I'm not telling anybody you shouldn't be on Facebook. Everybody get on Facebook. Just everybody join. And just splatter yourself all over it, you know. But as for me in my house, I'm teasing. I need to get off of this because. But my point is deception is it play it. You know, I mean, we're reading the book of Revelation. The whole world was deceived by these beasts, and how they were doing things that looked like it was God, but it wasn't God, and. Things are not God. God is God, and you have to know God, not God things. And if you don't, you are cannon fodder for the enemy. Yes.
Maybe it was the last class where you said that one of them looked like a lamb.
Yes.
I'm just thinking, if you don't know God by essence, there is just no hope for you in the book of Revelation. You're stuck in the sense realm, worshiping the beast.
Right. And, you know, I mean, I'll just say this. I've said it so many different ways, but the truth is, even in life in the Spirit that is the basic support that I bring in, I tell people not to support me. I mean, I don't want them to support me. I cancel their support every year, everybody, and tell them, you better pray and hear from God. I don't want them just doing it every year or year after year or with no end, you know. Because only God knows. I don't even know. I want lots of supporters so that I'll have plenty of money. Well, we don't have that. But the supporters that I have, I can believe they come from God. And I like that. I like it a lot. You know? And I say, you get hold of God. You follow God. You be with God. So that I don't have to, you know, for the longest, I mean, for years and years and years, only the last year and a half, I guess, have I even been giving personal information about the family or the, you know, stuff like that. I wouldn't even talk about me. You know, people say, well, how do I know how to pray for you? Well, I guess you'll just check with the Lord and he'll tell you what I need, you know. But last year and a half, I've at least been giving personal information about our family or new things going on or stuff like that. But none of that is so that, you know, none of it has that support me American ministry mentality. Some of you know what I'm talking about. I'm going to get off this. All right. So in this book, the Spirit seeks not simply to open our ears to the things of God, but to his nature as demonstrated by Christ crucified. By means of this recognition, we should also become more discerning concerning what is not of the Lord's nature. The contrast between the beasts and the Lamb are there to help the churches hear what the Spirit is saying to them concerning these things. All right, we are in the chapter that I want to go under the next subtitle. Revelation 13 and verse 1 through 3. The name of this is the Wounded and Healed Beast. It's a subtitle underneath this. And I stood upon the sand of the sea and saw a beast rise up out of the sea. Any of you ever see that old, 50s movie, Godzilla? That's the one. Of course, we were a lot more innocent back then, but that scared the fool out of me when he came up. The water starts bubbling, and the music. Oh, my God, there's a beast rising out of the sea. Godzilla's nothing. He's a sissy compared to this. Rise up out of the sea, having 7 heads and 10 horns, and upon his horns 10 crowns, and upon his heads the name of blasphemy. And the beast which I saw was like a leopard, and his feet were like the feet of a bear, and his mouth like the mouth of a lion. And the dragon gave him his power and his throne and great authority. And I saw one of his heads as though it were wounded to death. And his deadly wound was healed. And all the world wondered after the beast. All right. Read a little here. Though not given the particulars, we're told that one of the beast's heads becomes mortally wounded. But he does not die, nor does he stay wounded. The beast gets healed. And the entire world becomes moved by this as they marvel at his great deliverance and miraculous recovery. Glory to the beast. Okay, let's read. Let's read verse 4. And they worshiped the dragon who gave power unto the beast, and they worshiped the beast, saying, who is like the beast? Who is able to make war with him? Okay, and then let's drop down to verse 11. And I beheld another beast coming up out of the earth, and he had 2 horns like a lamb, and he spoke like a dragon, and he exercised all the power of the first beast before him, and causeth the earth and them that dwell on it to worship the first beast, whose deadly wound was healed. To worship the first beast. See, we would end right there. He would cause everyone to worship the first beast, But it's not just the beast, the first beast. It's not just that. You worship the one whose deadly wound was healed. This is miraculous. This is extraordinary. This is supernatural. All right? And then let's see. Let's look at verse 14. And deceiveth them that dwell on the earth by means of those miracles which he had power to do in the sight of the beast, saying to them that dwell on the earth that they should make an image to the beast, comma, that had the wound by a sword and did live. Anybody notice how often when it refers to the beast, it doesn't refer to any other really great thing by which we should worship him. It is all related to this deadly wound unto death, and this miraculous recovery. So, let me see. The results of this healing is greater glory to himself and becomes the impetus for deceiving and ultimately enslaving the whole world. In the case of the lamb, he too became mortally wounded. Isaiah 53:5. He was wounded for our transgressions. The lamb was wounded for his selflessness in seeking to free others by means of his own death instead of theirs. But even in resurrection, he appears as a slaughtered lamb, Revelation 5:6. After his resurrection, he showed them the scars in his hands because he is and always will be a selfless lamb. He will remain slaughtered. Worship the lamb slaughtered, slain. That slaughtered, remember, is the actual translation there. Even so, well, let's see, he does not seek healing for his wounds. I mean, he said, you know, see my hands? Apparently something still showed up. He didn't just get healed and everybody go, see my hands, I'm healed. Well, praise God, you're like the beast. Let's worship him too. No, he said, this is the proof of my love. This is the proof of my care. This is not ugly. This is beautiful. These are wounds of love that I receive gladly for your behalf. Just the opposite of the beast. Just the opposite of the beast. Even so, we are never to recover from the mortal wounding that took place at the cross whereby our old nature was crucified. You never get up. You know? Some of you may remember years ago when I first used that phrase, mortal wounding, and I used it in a newsletter some years later after that, and it's become sort of a catchphrase that I use a lot, but it came out of a recognition of what the Lord had done when he was bringing me into the revelation of Christ, and he was working to form his son in me. And to do that, he had to bring about the death of the old man, or if you will, an acknowledgement of it, but an acknowledgement that ended that reign. And when I was seeking the Lord, and I would see something of the cross, and I would go, oh, this is it, I've got it, you know. All my friends, you know, I've got a revelation of Christ, look, it says this, only to see that the beast was still alive later. Some of you know what I'm talking about. And then you go, oh, must not really be working in me yet. Lord, you know, back on my knees, Lord, reveal your son in me and go back, you know. And sure enough, man, he'd show me some great stuff. And I'd jump up, run around, look, yeah, I've got it this time, you know. And that went on and on and on and on. God, help us. Um, the old man, the old nature showing up again. And I said, Lord, I do not believe that you just want us to believe a doctrine of this while we live contrary to it. I cannot believe that. And I'm not going to believe it. I'm going to believe that there's an actual place that you can come to where you swing that sword and I go down and I don't get up. Lord, help me. And back in, you know, back on the knees, back in the Word, back crying out and saying, I'm not giving up, you know. Because it's so easy to, you know, you're under pressure. The Spirit of God's dealing with you. You know, people say, I want the hand of the Lord on me, but it's like this. You know. Yes, Lord, okay. And, you know, and then so when the relief comes, they see something, relief comes, they don't want to go back there again. But if it hasn't done the work, I don't want to go anywhere else but to the Lord until, and that's just one phase. I mean, there's so much other stuff, you know. I mean, just dealing with your soul or your pride or, you know what I mean? That's all later. But we're talking about the recognition of the death of the old man at work in you, where you can reckon on that and pass through that valley. And one day, the Spirit came, you know. It reminds me right now of Joshua when he's getting ready to go into the promised land. He goes into the land by himself and he goes into this place and he's in the land, but he's praying to get ready to take his men in. And he sees the angel of the Lord, you know, angel of the Lord of hosts. And Joshua says, you know, whose side are you on? You know, are you on our side? And he said, neither. I'm not on your side or his side. I'm on the Lord's side. You're right now, you're the enemy, buddy. You know, you need the Lord dealing with you. Not my brother, not my sister, but it's me, oh Lord. Standing in the need of prayer. You know. Man, it was like the Spirit of God took a big old Viking sword and just, whoosh, man. And I mean, I remember now, it was, that didn't, you know, I'm just saying the experience that I went through spiritually for me could be drawn by this picture, but it wasn't this picture. You understand what I'm saying? I'm just giving you a picture of what spiritually transpired. For me, it was like, and I mean, my guts, my organs that keep me alive were just coming out. And it was like I looked at it, I looked at him, and I looked back at this. I said, you know, I don't remember exactly all the, I just remember kind of looking at him going, you know, I'm not going to make it through this time, am I? And he said, no, you're not. You know, down I went onto my knees spiritually, of course, and never to rise in that vein. Again, you got other things of the flesh and all this junk that you're going to have to deal with. But there is a once and for all reckoning of the old man dead. That's what the Bible says. Romans 6 makes that absolutely clear. Romans 7. For us, there is a deadly wound that we're wounded with that we're never going to get healed from. We'll never, ever get over it. We'll always, you know, another picture that I remember, this is a Texas picture, but this is some of you way back remember, Mallory, and some of y'all will remember the picture that the Lord gave me. It was like, you know, it was like an old cowboy that was stealing horses or something, and he got caught, and they hang him, you know. And for me, though, the death happens, but after that, you're walking around, even though you're dead, you're alive by Christ, and you're about to reach forth your hand to do something in the flesh that's not Christ. You start to do it, and your hand goes up your neck, and you sort of feel those scars, and the rope burns it there, and you go, no, I don't think so. Lord, I'm with you. I don't think we're going to go there. You know, and you just get in the habit of just reaching up and feeling those rope burns and going, nah, we're not going to. I don't want another lap in the wilderness. You know, 40 years, another lap. I just got sick of me. I got sick of my flesh. I got sick of what wasn't Christ. And what an affront that it was to my Father that this was what was manifesting instead of his Son. And the Holy Spirit who came to reveal Christ. And apparently I was violating this stuff. And, well, you know, you don't become like the beast. You don't get healed. And then build your ministry on this great, marvelous event that happened so that everybody will come and gather to you and you'll get all this glory. But rather, I don't want any glory. I don't want any glory. I don't want my flesh to get any glory. I mean, you know, I still have to deal with pride and stuff, you know, and I mean, I slap it down. I mean, it's just funny what pride can do and what the soul can do. And I mean, I, you know, every once in a while we have this thought, you know, and it'll da 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 da, and it'll go in there, and I'll go, we don't go that well. You know, we won't think on that. I won't meditate on it. I don't want to think about such things. They're contrary to Christ. And, you know, you know, it's kind of like those typewriters. You remember how to go, and go, okay, you're out of here. All right. So, God help. You know, for may the Spirit take all this foolishness and all these pictures and go past my pitiful examples and reveal Christ in us. Reveal Christ in us more and more, deeper and deeper, and keep us ever weak, ever wounded, ever needy, ever content. You know, Paul said, you know, the beast gloried in his healing. Paul gloried in his affliction and his stuff. So that he said, I glory in all these things because when I'm weak, then Christ is my strength. Christ is made unto me that. So it's just a huge contrast, you know, it's just a huge contrast. However, it seems that there are some who emerge from an experience of the cross unscathed. In fact, they come out in victory and leave all that pertains to the cross behind them. Paul said, I am determined not to know anything but Christ and him crucified. This is one of the contrasts between the beast and the lamb. All right, another small subheading is the contrast of the motives of followers. So now we're not just contrasting the beast to the lamb, but we're contrasting the lamb within us compared to the beast within them. Because it's the same difference. All right, another contrast between the beast and the lamb is that the beast imposes his will on others, but the lamb follows a course of not my will, but thine be done. He did not come to do his own will, neither would Jesus force his will upon others. And I put down John 6:38. In like manner, those who follow the Lamb refuse to use coercion in order to accomplish God's purposes. And we'll somewhere later in this sharing, we'll address the many facets of how the beast gets its will, because it's not all force. The beasts are sneaky. They're slippery. They're subtle. They're more subtle than all the other creatures, you know. That's what said of the serpent in the Garden of Eden. In like manner, those who follow the Lamb refuse to use coercion, just as the Lamb renounced the power available to him for his own protection and personal benefit, but he emptied himself, so have his followers. To actively follow the Lamb may expose one to hardship, meaning if you're going to follow the Lamb, you may be exposed to things like hardship and rejection and wounds. Nah, let me just say it. You will be. However, the followers of the Lamb have seen his scars. They understand the cost. And they follow him anyway out of love. Paul put it this way, the love of Christ constraineth us. I was thinking of, again, of that example when Jesus was in the Garden of Gethsemane and he's praying. And, you know, I don't know if you've ever really, I mean, maybe that movie, The Passion of Christ, could help you a little on that subject, but we shouldn't have to have a movie. The Word of God really describes Jesus. It says, being in agony, he prayed the more earnestly. Well, folks, if that's true of Jesus, it ought to be true of us. Somebody says, oh, I just wish I could pray more earnestly. You sure you know what you're asking for? Because he doesn't give the gift of more earnest prayer. He gives you, you know, because we say, well, what is it? Tribulation worketh patience. I told somebody once, I said, well, I don't know if it's giving me patience or working the patience I have, but this tribulation is. But, you know, I mean, if you pray for patience, he's loveless in tribulation. Okay? So instead of being naive and feeding on just any old doctrines or things that people share, man, we got to get in the Word, you know? And Jesus is praying. And he knows what's coming, and it's still not easy for the Son of God. But I got news for you. When you go through it, it'll be the same Son in you. Okay. But then he gets it all settled. I mean, boy, once he gets up from that prayer thing, he's ready to go. He goes to the cross, and you know what I mean? But, I mean, they come in for him, and they're coming to take him. And, you know, I've mentioned this, I don't remember recently, but, you know, I can see them coming in the night, coming in with torches lit, you know, some swords. We know Malchus had a sword, clubs and stuff like that. And Jesus stands up, and his disciples, I'm sure, sort of stood behind him or whatever, and they're ready to take him. He's looking at that. He's going, okay, you got 20 men here. I can call 10,000 angels. How many you got? 20. Let's see. That's how many angels is that per person here? I'm just going to, you know, I expose my carnality all the time in these classes to show you where my mind has been at one time or another. You know what? If I was needing direction and I'm laying on my bed one night and an angel appears at the foot of my bed and he says, here's the way to get out of this trouble. I'll lead you through it, you know. And the next day is Sunday morning. Boy, people are going to hear about that. You know what I'm saying? And if any sort of angelic thing happens, my God, you know, and when I would talk about angels, we have a guardian angel. The angel of the Lord, you know, encamps round about us and delivers us for, you know, da-da-da-da, all this kind of stuff. And just, oh, my God, you know. And I'm not trying to belittle anything. I'm not trying to. But I'm looking at Jesus, and he's going, well, I got 10,000 of them, and I'm not even going to use them. I mean, that shamed me because I'm thinking, I would have. You know what I mean? I mean, I wouldn't have hesitated. Sick 'em, boys. You know. And I would have had the glory of telling everybody about my angel experience. Jesus, you know, Jesus refused the angel experience. And even consider, you know, 3 years earlier when he's out in the wilderness being tempted of the devil, and he's walking as a man, and he won't do any of those miracles. Cast yourself down, turn this, won't do. No, I'm not going to do that. I'm not going to protect myself. So he goes through all that. I mean, folks, after 40 days and 40 nights of not eating and drinking, stuff like that, you get tired and hungry and irritable. You know what I mean? You know, you go, okay, devil. You know, on day 39, I can see it. Okay, devil. That's it. I've had it. Okay? You know. Jesus goes through that. And now here's my weird carnal mind again. Sorry. But it says, and the devil left him, and the angels came and ministered to him. Yeah, that's what I'm thinking, you know. Hey, boys, you know what I mean? I could have used you on day two of this thing here, you know? You know, I mean, I've heard people go, yeah, oh, the angels ministered to Jesus. Yeah, after he'd gone through it all by himself. I'm just, you know, I ain't saying I'm right with everything. I'm just saying that I think there's things that ought to make us go, you know, maybe we're approaching this thing wrong. Maybe the real thing is to go through. You know, he said, you know, he didn't say I'll keep you from the fire. He said I'll be with you in the fire. You know, the three Hebrew children being thrown in the fiery furnace. And he shows up in there. Frankly, I would have rather he showed up, you know, just before they threw me in, blew out the fire, and blew down everybody that was bad and said, this is my man. And I go, I tried to tell y'all. But he didn't do that. You get thrown in the fire with Jesus. Are you okay with that? Are you okay with being with Jesus? I just want to be with Jesus. Are you sure? Through the valley of the shadow of death, you okay with that? Fiery furnace, you okay with that? So, Paul says, the love of Christ constraineth us. What is the love of Christ? For God so loved that he gave. By this perceive we the love of God, that he laid down his life for us. That's how you perceive the love of God. And we ought to love one another. We ought to lay down our life for one another. It's the same thing. Don't tell me you love somebody if you won't die for them. And we're different. We're supposed to die for our enemies. And that's real easy to say right now. You know, the way that the enemy's, you know, really doing you wrong and really mistreating you and really, really doing stuff that hurts you, that hurts your family, that hurts your finances, that hurts, you know, your widow fee wins, you know? And that's when Jesus is supposed to shine the brightest. Well, I've failed at that at times. You have too. And you will. And when I failed at it, I said this to the Lord. I said, Lord, I am so sorry that I know I should be in a place where I should have handled this by your life, and I didn't. I believe that your Spirit is working on me to form Christ in me. But number two, instead of sitting here and beating myself over what I didn't do, I'm just going to look at you and how beautiful you are, because you do handle this stuff by this Spirit and this nature, and you never failed. So I just want you to know I still love it, even if it's not in me every moment of every kind of thing I go through. I love you. I love your nature. And I just want you to know that it may appear that I don't, but I do. Because I want you not there on some throne far away. I want you in here by life and by love. All right. So let's see. We got one more contrast here, and then we're going to get out of the introduction. It's true. And we'll get into the real meaning of this stuff. Okay, let's take a break, and we'll come back shortly.